Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Industries of the Chesapeake, as well as Window Nation. Get some new windows around here very, very soon, about 2 weeks away from that, as well as our friends at the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Restaurant Week coming up in September, but it's crab cakes and it's breweries all month long, 31 and 31 days. My 31st year on radio. This guy has been with me for about 27 of the 31 years that we've had here. Our tenured member here, back before we even had a football team. We had a baseball team taking my press credentials. The Baltimore Orioles, they're back. And that means Alan McCallum is here. He was at one time our Oriole insider, our ballpark reporter. They didn't like him. They didn't like me for obvious reasons. They threw both of us out at some point. He is now doing good things out in the world and still watching the Orioles. And it's like the Godfather, right? They brought you back. They sucked you back in, didn't they, Alan McCallum?
I mean, I wouldn't say I was ever gone, but it's good to see the team playing well. It's good to see the process working the way it was anticipated it would. Elias seems to know what he's doing, and having the number one farm system in baseball is a good thing to have in 2022 with the future quickly upon us.
Well, such are doing timed podcasts and around a baseball trading deadline, but make the case for and against Santander and Mancini in regard to trading them now when things are going well. Mancini had the magic moment on Thursday and the inside the park, the Mo moment and all that stuff. But the case for long term either way, or is right here, right now, something. You know, I saw the other day that they said 3% chance of making the play. There's six teams going to make the playoffs. I don't know where the percentages are, and certainly losing Wells and their pitching and like all of that, but I don't know what the right thing here to do is. Probably keep Trey Mancini and go get a pitcher and try to start playing for next year to some degree to make next year better and make this year as good as it can be. But I don't know that you get anything for these guys. But by the time people listen to this, they might both be gone because that's the way Elias rolls, I guess.
The case for and the case against. All right. The case for Mancini is the last tie to 5 years of great baseball under Buck Showalter. He is as quality a human being as you would want to have on your baseball team, on any team. He is, he seems to be passionate about, the way he plays, about the community. He is everything everyone would want an Oriole to be. And you hope that those guys put on an Orioles uniform as a rookie and take them off when they retire. He's a good hitter. I'm not sure he's completely recovered still from his bout with cancer, but he's certainly a good hitter, and he's the kind of player that will enhance any team, whether it be in a part-time role or an everyday role. He plays first base, he can play the outfield, and he can DH. That there's a little bit of versatility there, which is a useful thing. The case against: he doesn't really have a position on this team. They're going to play Mountcastle at first base because they believe he has a bigger upside. He has a brighter future. He doesn't cost as much, and he's not 30 years old. If there's anything the Orioles organization has, it's outfielders. They have a ton of outfielders. I've heard a lot of people making a case for going after Juan Soto, which is a ludicrous thought in my mind. One, because if they have anything, they have a ton of outfielders. Secondly, to think you do that in the thought that you're going to have a chance at the postseason this year, and whether or not they get to the postseason, is it possible? Yes. Are they going to win the World Series? No. And if they're not going to win that, then it doesn't really make sense. Yes, you'd have them for two more years. The whole point of building the way they did, completely tearing it down to the struts and taking the time to rebuild, which quite frankly has happened much faster than I think anybody would have expected, particularly with COVID and the setback financially that obviously was both for the Orioles, for a city that supports it, et cetera. To be where they are right now with the prospect of really being something in 2023 is pretty impressive. But to add a salary which is going to set you back for years to come and not allow you any flexibility after doing that makes no sense. And that sort of brings you to Trey Mancini in the sense that the whole point in what they're doing, it seems to me, is that they are building a farm system that will have, that will continue to pump out talent, both in the infield and in the outfield. The reality of that is going to really make Baltimoreans cringe, because the reality is that means you can let players go when they get expensive and get older so that you can replace them with younger players. And if you accept that as a philosophy, it means that players like Trey Mancini can go because you've got the Kyle Stowers, because you're going to have Keston Hurstad, because you've got various players at other levels that are going to be ready to take to fill those spots. Stowers is tearing it up at AAA. There's no reason for him not to be here, except that there isn't a position for him on the team. There isn't a spot for him. And once he gets here, he needs to play. That could be Mancini. That could be Santander. I think Santander is a good player, but he's a replaceable player. And he's someone that I think a lot of fans like. He's shown more patience this year. He's leading the team in home runs.
Well, he's an improved player from where they found him, right?
No question. And look, as a Rule 5, he's clearly the best Rule 5 in all of that that they've gotten out of.
He's no Nestor Cortez. Stop. Come on now.
Nestor Cortez may not be Nestor Cortez. We'll see. But but the point is that both of them are replaceable. If you want to get to the postseason this year, it probably makes no sense to trade them. And frankly, if you can't get anything for them, it seems a little irrelevant, except for the fact that you have to open up spots for other players to play.
Well, getting rid of them felt like a foregone conclusion in May, right? And no. Then you start to win and you're like, now what are we going to get for them? And then, but my part of this is, why are you going to fold tent the only season you've had that's mattered? You know what I mean? These guys have fought to make this matter. If you're getting some Delaware River mud and some, you know, low A bullpen pitcher, why are you dealing out of a year of strength? You have a chance this year. And yeah. I think you believe that. And I think anybody that's watched the team, and I think the guys on the team believe, hey, maybe we're onto something here. Why wouldn't you be dealing from your youth to bring in pitchers that can be here next year and taking on that, the salary we talk about, take on some $10 million pitchers, your next Ubaldo Jimenez is, to get them into the rotation. So you have something here, some sort of depth that you can compete next year, but maybe add this year. I don't know why you'd bust this up at this point. I don't know why you would brazenly get rid of real major league players on a team that might have a chance, because you don't never know whether you might have a chance or not. I know we're all talking about 24 and 25, and I'm not saying that that's not there. You have to give that away, but why give away now? I mean, why not try to get into the playoffs now?
I hear that Ubaldo Jimenez is coming back for the 30th anniversary celebration of Camden Yards.
As long as he doesn't pitch.
That's the only way he seemed like a heck of a nice guy. That's the only way I want another Ubaldo Jimenez anywhere near this team. Look, this is the glorious thing about the situation they're in. They can make the decision to trade for a couple of pitchers that will help them over the next 2, 3, 4 years if that opens up to them. Why not? They can deal from a position of strength and giving away some young talent on the farm. The trick is figuring out which ones you're willing to part with, right? You don't want to give away I'm going pie in the sky here and say Mike Trout, the next Mike Trout, when he hasn't even had a chance to play at the major league level and see what he can do. I think they can. Do I think they have a mathematical chance to make the postseason? Yes, I do. Mostly because the league is so watered down in terms of talent, but I don't think they have a chance to win the World Series. And if you get into the postseason, look, This town is starving for exciting baseball. You can see it, even if not in the attendance, you can feel it in the buzz that people talking about it.
Everybody wants to go down there and watch a ball game that likes baseball. I mean, I can put the game on TV. I rarely feel, and I don't live two blocks away anymore, but I I'm in the city three nights a week. I didn't have any problem making it down for ZZ Top. I don't have any problem making it down for my cat's appointment. I don't, you know, I like downtown. I no issue. So it's not, I'm afraid of the boogeyman, right? It's just, you know, it's hot out. The stadium's kind of empty. It doesn't look like it necessarily be more fun for me there than what it is. It's not this big raucous thing like a playoff game would be where you get that thing going. So, but watching them at this point, it's certainly, they're worth watching at this point, which is a big Absolutely. Upgrade of where they've been in 5 years.
Yeah, no question. Look, it's one of the things from being locked down for a year and a half is that some people are desperate to get out and some people are comfortable staying in. And
oh, I love my alone time. I mean, literally. And you know what? I love it every time. And I'll tell you this. I mean, can I just pitch for a minute randomly about something? Because sure. You're a music guy. You know what I love it the most is when I take my night, all right, ZZ Top the other night, just as an example, okay? We went down to Bare Naked Ladies 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to score Springsteen tickets. I'll be at Merriweather four times this month on the tour, like all of that. But when I spend my whole evening and I go to a concert and I'm next to somebody blowing smoke in my face, and not the good smoke, bad smoke, and talking during concerts and stuff like that, it makes me wish I stayed home to some degree, right? So being at home and listening to a concert here and just listening to it, as opposed to doing all this crap, spending all this money, doing all this stuff and showing up and having some jag off stand next to you in the pit when Bruce is singing, Drove All Night and somebody's talking during it, you know, like somebody right. talking when you're seeing Tears for Fears or whatever you've seen lately.
You're at a baseball game and people are getting up and down, going to get food every 10 seconds next to you, as opposed to watching the game. Yeah. Look, there are all kinds of reasons to stay home.
And I'm just saying I've become a little bit of a loner through all this.
And look, the reality is we are still in the midst of a pandemic, whether people actually believe it or not.
I don't shake people's hands and they get all offended when I fist bump them. I'm like, Dennis has had, we have people around here with COVID every day. I don't want it to be me.
Every day. I don't, if I go out tomorrow, I'm wearing my mask, period. So look, the world is complicated right now and it makes sense for a lot of people to stay home. The point is that it would take a miracle for the Orioles to win the World Series.
Yes. Yes. I agree with they're incapable of winning the World Series. I agree with that.
If you are Mike Elias, the question is about the prize. It makes sense to invigorate, to keep the town invigorated for the rest of this season and for the future. And if you say, if you think this team will collapse if you trade Mancini and Santander for the rest of the 2022 season, then maybe you take a pause on anything you're going to do and let Mancini walk as a free agent.
Well, who's getting those at bats for the next 50 games? I mean, that's going to be the question if you get rid of those guys.
That's the point. So if you say, hey, Stowers is ready now, I can trade Santander. Or you push one of the other younger guys, then maybe that makes sense. But if you think the team's going to collapse and finish 15 games under 500, they won their 50th game and last year they won it after the 155th game of the season. That is wild.
It's colossal improvement. I mean, it really is.
But the reality is it's the end of July and they're still one game over 500. So let's keep all this in perspective. Now they're going on a three city tour where against teams that have bad records. And if they do what they can do, maybe they come back five or six games over 500, then we're having a different conversation.
I want to see this thing breathe and give it a chance. And if it's over a couple of low A prospects, then I don't know why you don't play your hand here. I mean, Al McCallum is here. He is our longtime baseball insider. And Rutschman, where are you on Rutschman at this point? This is, you know, a typical, you know, big ceiling guy coming up and just struggling for a couple of weeks. And then like, thing comfortable. I mean, he looks like a big league ball. He looks like a very good big league ball player right now.
So I said, look, Rutschman has been really good. Obviously there, you can't deny the record and how dramatically improved this team has been since he's come up. I'm always a little leery about, look, if you have a young pitching staff, you want a veteran catcher to help bring them along. I think Robinson Chirinos starting the season off with this club was really key in terms of getting these guys to a place where they found something in themselves, but almost to a man throughout the pitching staff. Rutschman is not a veteran, but he does exhibit veteran qualities behind the plate. You know, the whole he could
as throw, advertised, by the way.
Right. the whole he can throw from home plate to second base with it, you know, with his blinders on. That doesn't really matter much when you're playing a major league game. So I mean, that he could certainly still improve. And I will tell you, I like guys who swing the bat. I'm not saying with a two, you know, hitting 280 and having a 290 on base percentage, you want to be selective, but he is part of the generation that looks to take a walk whenever they can. So, I mean, that's a personal preference. He's getting on base, makes all the sense in the world to put him in the number two spot.
Well, taking a walk also means you don't swing at bad pitches. Period. I mean, if you're willing to take a walk and being selective, you will be a better hitter just by the very nature of being selective. Literally. Yeah. Unless you're Yogi Berra.
There is an argument for that, but I would tell you that Eddie Murray wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame if he never swung at bad pitches, right? I mean, if you're looking to hit home runs.
Well, they didn't want to throw him many good ones.
If you're looking to hit home runs all the time, it's a bad thing to swing at bad pitches. If you're looking to put the ball in play and hit the ball over the head of the shortstop, when they're trying it, when you've got a runner on second base, sometimes it makes sense to swing at pitches that aren't strikes. It's a philosophy, and it's an argument worth having. I think there's truth on both sides of that. The point is, Rutschman is being what he should be for him. I would tell you guys like Weeders and Chris Davis and people we've had this conversation about for so long. The biggest thing about them offensively is that they were always, instead of doing what they could do really well, they were always trying to do things in a different way. As long as Rutschman is taking walks, swinging the bat, hitting doubles when the pitch makes it available to him, hey, Adley Rutschman for president. That's a good thing. It's fine that he's not chasing rookie of the year. He needs to be who he is right now. And hopefully we will see him grow into the 1-1, both offensively and defensively, that he was drafted to be.
Alan, you've been down there in the good times, the bad times, the full days, the Delmon Young days, the, you know, Davey Johnson days, all that stuff. I actually thought of Jeffrey Mayer the other day. Somehow I thought of him and didn't think of you, but which is impossible because I was sitting next to you. But, where are you with the experience of going down? I mean, I haven't been, and I was going to go see Nestor Cortez. It was 100 degrees. I got offered some tickets. It was just one of those days where I thought, nah, I just don't have it in me to go down there and sit on a hot seat and just do it. I mean, when the game's on TV, you've been going, give me a little primer on that. It was going the last couple of years. It was like going to see the funeral of a friend to me. It wasn't fun when I went. Obviously the plague changed things dramatically. It's coming back now. It definitely feels like the only people that are there are baseball geeks. It's not a tourist thing. Everybody's wearing orange. Everybody's, you know, part of the church, and there's been things to celebrate, right? So every night they're hitting home runs, things are happening. It's funny. We don't talk about the left field wall so much. I still think it's ugly as hell. I think it's weird. Like all of it, maybe it's 30 years of looking at it the way I did. They're winning. So maybe, you know, it's working, whatever that was. But yeah. What do you make of going down there and sitting in the bowl of the stadium and being a part of it?
All right. So let's be clear. I've been there twice. I've been there twice in the last, in what, 2.5 years. My first game back.
All the more reason to ask you what's it like to go back when you don't go often, right?
My first game back was the game against the Angels on Friday night. It was July 8th when they had 4 straight hits and won the game after Ohtani and Trout had hit home runs to give the Angels the lead. It was one of the most magical games I've ever seen. Down to 2 strikes with 2 outs and they win the game.
And there were people there.
Yeah. Well, and fireworks night, and it was sloppy hat night. So yeah, there were people there. Look, I'm still coming out of the lockdown session, right? I mean, I, my risk is at the Kennedy Center. There's plenty of risk there when I go to work every day. So going out amongst people in leisure is still something that I'm reacclimating to. But it was fine. That was fine. It's a different experience. I mean, Camden Yard, the city is a different place.
No doubt.
You can feel that there are areas around the city that used to be well kept and taken nurtured in a way, because they wanted people to come down, that feel neglected now. You go out three blocks past Camden Yards and you feel the difference. But there's a bubble. There's still a bubble directly around the ballpark. The concessions are a little weird. And I don't think make a lot of sense right now, the way they have it set up. I miss my Roma sausages, at Camden Yards. But the game is that's not true. Even the game is a little different. I mean, the analytics have gotten so far into the game. I've said this to you, three true outcome baseball isn't the thing that I love it quite as much.
You like strategy baseball.
I do. I like guys that hit 300, that can hit 300. I like guys that hit the ball the other way. I think baseball gets a little boring if you're only taking walks and trying to hit home runs and striking guys out. I like to watch good players play defense. And obviously those things still exist in the game, but it is different. And the strategy is different. Left field, I sat down there and watched 30 years of baseball at Camden Yards where you hit the ball 364. I called them Camden specials, right? And that's a can of corn now if you've got an outfielder worth his salt. But you know what? To say that this team isn't pitching better has anything to do with that left field wall being further back, you're not paying attention. I mean, when you feel like you can throw the ball and have it hit in the air and ultimately have a chance for it not to be a 2 or 3 run homer because you gave up a little, makes a difference. And when they go out to sign pitchers in the future, that's going to make a difference to some guys, maybe not everybody, because you're still facing the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Blue Jays, and the Rays, on a daily basis out at the ballpark. But hey, next year, you're not going to be playing an unbalanced schedule. You're going to play everybody in baseball. So that makes it a little bit easier. So the math of all that, hey, it's different. You get used to it. Let the left field wall reign. The guys, I mean, the players are different. I mean, at the last time we went out, I was out there. It was a different bunch of guys. So it's not just laundry for me. I like to know things about the players and be well versed in who the team is and what's going to happen. I'm 50, and you measure life differently. Baseball it will always be a thing I'm incredibly passionate about, but priorities change. Life demands different things. So the equation never ends. It's a different thing, but going to Camden Yards is always going to be something really special for me. It's always going to be sanctuary. I'll say that it's going to be a place where you get away from the rest of the world, and it still has its own stresses, and you know, 14 losing seasons sitting in those seats is still something that I remember, like it's chiseled in my brain with, I don't know, the sharpest axe you can think of, but ultimately, so many wonderful things I've experienced down there, and seen so much, so many good, great players do their thing. And to me, that's something pretty special.
Any interest at all in Lou versus John? Are you on team John or team Lou? Have you figured that out yet? Which team you need to be? I'm on team new owner, but I did free the bird 16 years ago, Alan. So I've been on team new owner, team non-Angelos for a long, long time. But this is typical, I guess, to some degree when these circumstances, but it's not good. I mean, if they were in a pennant race right now and had to add Soto, who the hell would make that kind of decision? Literally,
right.
You know, they don't really have that right. They don't have the ability to do that right now.
You know what, Nestor, am I concerned about it? Yeah, of course. I mean, when the people that own the team you love are at war with one another, you should pay attention.
All I could think is, haven't you screwed it up enough?
Well, okay. So here's the thing. And I'll say this, like you posted the picture with the three number ones the other day and said, you know, the futility, celebrating futility. But here's the reality. When Peter was the guy and they had 14 losing seasons because they should have torn it down and started over, and he kept buying these subpar and mediocre players to feign the idea of competition, that didn't make any sense. Tearing it down and rebuilding, particularly in the American League East, against the Yankees and the Red Sox and these kinds of teams, and doing and building foundation for an organization that can sustain success for years to come. I don't know how there would have been. I don't know how you do anything else with the Nats just a few miles away and Northern Virginia not coming anymore. How do you do that? So if futility was awful and watching them lose 100 games a year was awful, but to get to this point where you can look back and see that there's a foundation here for years to come is really good. I say that to say that doesn't happen if the current ownership isn't doing, the current leadership isn't doing something that seems to be right. They hired some good people. They've made some tough decisions. They seem to be sticking to a plan. The plan seems to be working. You can see a model that can sustain itself for a decade, 15 years. I don't know. We'll have to see. Once you get there, you then have to continue to make good decisions and do things that make sense. And again, to Baltimore fans, a lot of that's going to mean trading guys that you might love right before they get expensive, to bring up the next guy. But if you ask me, do I have a problem with the way the team has been run since Michael Elias has been here? No, I really don't. Does that mean that I'm on Team John?
Well, the rubber meets the road when they have to sign one of these guys for real money. Like when you see Machado be completely mishandled in that way. And this speaks to where the Ravens are with Lamar Jackson and either giving him a lot of money or not giving him a lot of money and figuring out, well, let's get three number ones for him if we're not going to, you know, whatever that thing is going to be that you're going to do. Those are big boy decisions that involve lots and lots of money. The Chris Davis situation, fiasco, the Albert Bell fiascos, you know, it's a fiasco for the Ravens. If Ronnie Stanley doesn't get on the field, you give a lot of money to somebody that doesn't play. Right. So making those decisions for the Orioles, that's when the rubber, because Elias hadn't had to make any decisions other than I don't have any money. I don't need any money. I don't have to sign any players. Nobody cares if I lose 110 games or 120 games. I just need to stink bad enough and then make really good decisions on my Jackson Holidays. And if we do that, great. That's good. That'll get them there. And then after that, it's, well, do we need to go give a Scherzer some money? Do we need to go pay for somebody? Do we need to deal for a Benintendi? Taking on money when all they've done is tear down, tear down, tear down. I mean, they have the lowest payroll in the sport. At some point, they're going to need to spend some money. Yes. And that money comes from daddy in the old days. Now it comes from John Boy and Lou Boy or mama, whoever decides, yeah, I'll take that. Because these aren't small decisions. There's no $30 million free agents anymore. Right. One of these decisions is an $80 to $200 million decision. If you're just getting a number three starter, literally Trey Mancini, if he were going to get a 4-year deal, it'd be a decision at this point.
I mean, let's be clear. It's one thing to trade Manny Machado and the replacement for him is not to be found on the minor league level. So you sign a Freddie Galvis to play on the left side. It's a different thing if you trade Manny Machado and right after that, you bring up a Jackson Holiday or a prospect of quality that you think is well-versed to replace the next guy. So if the next man up is,
well, Mountcastle for Mancini's good.
Absolutely. Right. Exactly. Right. So, I mean, it, the quality of the decision is often based in what you did before to put you in that position. That said, yes, they're absolutely going to have to spend some money, to bring in a Scherzer at the trade deadline, to bring in maybe not a Juan Soto, but I don't know. another quality player to help you in the middle of your lineup. The Nelson Cruz acquisition, so to speak, at the time when you need it, who can be
no matter leader. Who you are, you need that. No, they're going to need that. Houston needed that, right? You're going to, whatever they have, Rutschman, Hall, they're all great. At some point, they're either going to need to sign them 3 years from now, 4 years from now, and lock them up before they get to the number, or they're going to have to add. And that's where Mike Elias can be the smartest guy in the world. He can even have a budget, right, to right. some degree. But we've never really seen ownership here make good decisions when it came time to say, Mr. Owner, what should we do? It's very clear Bisciotti's hands on out at the castle. And as much as this is Eric Steele, this isn't Eric Steele, it's Steve Steele. And I guess that's my point with everything, that a lot, I don't think John said pick Holiday instead of the other kid, Jones, right? I don't, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about money, and that's where the big decisions are. And that's who's sitting in that chair makes all the difference in the world in this sport. And if the thing is, well, Mike, you got $120 million in payroll, go for it. Mike Elias has never seen a nickel here from the owners, right? You're seeing a real payroll. So when it comes time to get that, I'm convinced he'll make good decisions, but where is the money? And that's what I've been bitching about for 15 years, where they've burned the city down. The boys and the old man don't. Where is the money coming from to do this internally to compete with the Yankees? The Orioles. I mean, the Ravens don't have to worry about that. Yeah, they're getting their TV money. Now it's just good decisions for them. With the Orioles, it's do we have the money? Could right. we sign Soto? Well, would he take it? And do we want him?
So again, the Nationals came and took the real money out of the equation by taking Northern Virginia and DC essentially away from the Orioles, and Masson was supposed to offset that. And they've been in a dispute, and that was anointed by Major League Baseball. And now they've been in a dispute for the last 10 years about,
after creating the world's worst Major League Baseball franchise, they created the world's worst regional sports network. There's a little theme here, right? I mean, that should have paid for it. I mean, it's paid for it in Boston and in New York, at least it, over this period of time, this 15 years, the first 15 years of making cable money, they squandered all that. You know what I mean? That's my point. When it comes time for them to do something well and it goes to their desk, I have zero confidence. That's the problem I'm seeing with these young players, is saying, man, I hope we get a new owner here by 25 or 26 when it comes time to do business with Adley Rutschman, to really do business with him.
We'll see what comes of it. We'll see what comes of it.
Hey, man, I appreciate the enthusiasm, and get a real team. These are good decisions to have, as to say, how are we're good and how do we get better? We haven't said that since 2012, right? Literally.
It's been a long time.
How's real life for you? Any concerts this summer? Anything fun? Good?
Things are a little slower after a very busy, very complicated year of figuring out how to get people in the building and keep them safe and be responsible. And still have spectacular performances. Happy to have it be a little slower right now, but, you know, like everybody, there've been a lot of lessons over the last 2.5 years, and, you try to make good decisions moving forward based on the things that you know now.
Well, I know with all the tickets you get for the honors program, and I know they're mostly downstairs, really close to the stage. If you just get me one up in the balcony, up near, you know, where all the, oh, that's right. That's where the president and celebrities are. But hey, honors is great, and it's a big night, and it's what your folks are known for. And I did see the nominees. It's always honorable. At least it was, except for those couple of years.
It's a good list. For the next year, it's a good list. Now, the honors isn't in my hall. That's in the Opera House. But we get the Mark Twain Prize. So that's the comedians, John Stewart, and what have you.
Good Americans like John Stewart. I like that.
Absolutely.
Especially this week, speaking up for people. Alan, I appreciate you speaking up, man. And I hope we do get to go to a game at some point. Now that we're in our 50s together, right. I've been here a couple of years. Welcome to the club. It's okay. it feels okay, right? Other than the gray coming in, everything else is okay. Maybe back a little bit, right?
I have plenty of gray. I would say that I'm not feeling aches and pains every minute of the day, but you certainly feel, you approach things you're going to do with a different set of eyes. I'll say that.
Well, it's going to be a different kind of fall around here as well. And I hope we get together and get something non-cheese related. I mean, it's Roar Farms Month. Let's go get some chicken palooza. We'll get a chicken box, get some Western fries, and make it all happen. Our wise conversations are made wiser when Alan McCallum joins us here as well. The Maryland Lottery is sponsoring our tour. It is our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I know it's hard for Alan to believe that I'm doing 31 crab cakes and 31 breweries because I've been here for 31 years, but he's been here 27 of those years. We're going to celebrate them all 31 days during the month of August. All it brought to you by our friends at Goodwill Industries of the Chesapeake, as well as Window Nation and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Maybe I'll get Alan out for Restaurant Week, second week of September, because I'm a cheapskate. Save me some money when we'll do that as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.